Hello there, and right sleeper. Mechanchos, mechanchim, noshim chashuvos. I consider this a schus, very big honor to be able to be here this evening. I really had no choice when I was contacted in Eretz Yisrael by your representatives and invited me to be here tonight. I felt that the halacha of Ein Misarvin LeGodel, this institution is world-renowned, both in kamus and in eichus, quantity and quality, and one does not refuse great institutions and great people. So I had no choice. But what are you going to gain from that? That explains what I'm doing here. When I was a rabbi in Miami, I used to give my drushes on Shabbos morning. And one Sunday morning, one of my balabatim told me that he did not sleep all Motzei Shabbos because of my drasha. I said that I was flattered to think that my drasha made such an impression on him that it didn't let him sleep all night. He said, not exactly. But whenever I sleep in the daytime, I have a hard time sleeping at night. I learned from that I have a special power of putting people to sleep when I speak. And I imagine that the administration of the Beis Yaakov realized that New York is a very stressful place to live in, and they wanted to do you a favor, invited me to put you to sleep for a while. If you are hardcore insomniacs and will not be able to enjoy that chesed, then you're going to have to hear some Divrei Torah. One of the basic problems, in my estimation today, even in the world of Shomrei Torah mitzvahs, people think that their tachlis is to be fulfilled, and they live their lives seeking fulfillment, when in fact, people were created to fulfill their tachlis, and their tachlis is not to be fulfilled. And each and every one of us has a purpose in this world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu deemed for us and designated for us. We do not create the framework within which we exercise our Bechira Chofshi, our free will, but we don't have free will on everything. We didn't ask to be created the way that we were. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us Jews, men, women, put us where we are to function, gave us the families that we have. All of those things are beyond our choice. And each and every one of us has a mission in this world that is bordered by that framework which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. And our purpose is to function within that framework and to fulfill our mission, to fulfill our responsibility in this world. And it's very difficult. Specifically speaking about women, I know that when we sing Eishes Chayil, Leil Shabbos, before the meal, my wife usually is beaming. And I always think to myself, she really thinks about what we're saying. It's not really very commendable to Jewish women. Because what does Shlomo HaMelech say? Eishes Chayil Miyimtza. It's hard to find an Eishes Chayil amongst Jewish women. They are very rare. Doesn't sound like a great praise of Jewish women. How could Shlomo HaMelech say such a thing? And Shlomo HaMelech himself contradicts himself. But towards the end he says, Rabos Bonos Asu Chayil. Many Jewish women are Neshei Chayil. So there's so many of them, why are they hard to find? Someone once told me the answer to this question is Rabos Bonos Asu Chayil. Many unmarried women can be Benos Chayil. But Eishet Chayil Mi'imtza. Once a woman is married, it's very difficult. I don't think that's the answer. I'll tell you what I think the answer is. What I think the answer is, Eishet Chayil Mi'imtza, you can't find an Eishet Chayil. They don't grow on trees. They're not like pearls, that if you're lucky, you find an oyster that has a pearl in it, and if you're not lucky, then the oyster has nothing in it. Women, Neshei Chayil, don't just happen. But Rabos Bonos Osu Chayil. Many, many women made themselves into Neshei Chayil with a lot of hard work and effort. That, there are many, many Jewish women who are Neshei Chayil. But Eishes Chayil Mi'imtza, you can't just find them. They don't just happen. They happen because you put in the effort, because you put in the work, blood, sweat, and tears that's necessary to create an Eishes Chayil. And what is that misgeret, that framework, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Jewish woman to function within? What are the parameters of a woman's role in Torah? And that is a very broad and multifaceted topic. I want to speak about one aspect of it. One aspect of the role of the Jewish woman when it comes to Torah. You're all familiar with the two Ma'amori Chazal that I'm going to mention. And I want to tell you what I think they both mean and why there's really no contradiction between them, even though on the surface it seems they're very contradictory. In a few places, Chazal say, Noshim Daiten Kalos Alehen. I'm sure you're familiar with that Maimer Chazal. And I'm sure that you misunderstand it. Simply translated, women are light-minded, simple-minded. It's not what it means. For this Maimer Chazal refers to Sor Imenu. Sor Imenu was a Neviya greater than Avram Avinu. And to be a Navi, you have to be a Chacham. So Sor Imenu was not simple-minded, Chas V'Shalom, or light-minded. Whenever Chazal mentioned this Maimer, it's always with the same terminology, Noshim Daiten Kalos Alehen. With that extra word in the end, Alehen, which we will explain in a second after we mention the other Maimer Chazal that seems to contradict that. Chazal say, Bina Yaseira Nitna Be'isha Yoser Miba'ish. A woman was given greater understanding even than a man. Now if you put those two together, they are not insulting to women, they are insulting to men. Think about it for a second. Women are simple-minded, but they're a lot smarter than men. So to defend my honor, I'm going to explain what they both mean. And that not only aren't they contradictory, but they complement and supplement each other. Every human being, man or woman, is imbued with two faculties, Das and Bina. Das basically is the analysis of facts, of data, being able to analyze it intellectually, analytically, and come to what is factual and what's not factual. That is more or less what Das is. Bina starts where Das ends. Once you know what the facts are, what is true and what is false, then there is Dina, Nevin Dover, Mitoch Dover, Dina Miloshin Binyan. You build onto those facts. What do they mean? What are the implications? How do you apply those facts in a real-life situation? How do you put it into a framework where it is usable? That's Dina. And every human being has both Das and Bina. The Chazal tell us, Bina Yaseira Nitna Be'isha, Yoser Miba'ish. There's an extra Yoser there. If it just meant that women have more bina than men, then it should have said, bina yaseira nitma be'isha mi ba'ish. Or bina nitma be'isha yoser mi ba'ish. Why bina yaseira nitma be'isha yoser mi ba'ish? What Chazal are telling us is that a woman was given an extra measure of bina more than her das. She has an imbalance. She can be a genius in das, but her bina is always a little bit stronger. The Rebbe Nachum gave a woman that extra intuition, that sensitivity to understand the implications of factual information and to know how to apply it. That's what a woman was given, extra, more than her das and even more than a man. Two extras. If that's the case, if you have a scale and you have a ton of steel on one side of the scale, and a ton of steel with a feather on the other side of the scale, then the side with the feather is one feather heavier than the other side, and the other side is a feather lighter. So one side is heavier and one side is lighter. That doesn't mean that a ton of steel is light. It's just lighter than the other side. Nashim daifin kalos aleihen. If a woman was given bina yaseira, she was given an extra measure of bina more than her das, then conversely, daifin kalos aleihen. In regard to their other quality of bina, their das is always lighter. Doesn't limit their das. They could be geniuses in das. But potentially, a woman has more potential for bina than she has for das. That doesn't mean that any woman is going to exercise that bina or not exercise the bina, just as much as a man. Nothing guarantees anything. If you use your mind, then you can develop it, and you can have that potential of bina yaseira. If you don't use it, then both men and women can be total idiots also. It doesn't say anything about any specific woman, nor does it say anything about the mental capabilities of either. What Chazal are telling us is the potential. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave women an extra measure of bina more than their das, and men more or less are the ones that are entrusted with the das itself. And that's why there's a very big difference between av and ein. An av is aleph beis. Aleph Beis is an arithmetic progression. Aleph to Beis to Gimel, very analytical, very simple. That is Das. Ein is a geometric progression. Starts with Aleph and runs till the middle of the Aleph Beis, till the Mem, till the first closed letter, which stops it. And if you extend that progression from Aleph to Mem, what is the next progression? Mem to Tav, Emes. That's where the emes comes in this world. What a mother has to give her children is not the same thing the father. Shma b'ni musar avicha. The child listens and gains knowledge. A father has a mitzvah on the Torah to teach his child information, Torah information. And that Torah information is also musar. V'altitos Torah simecha. But the mother teaches her children how to take that Torah information and apply it to real life situations, to create a mizgeret, to create a framework within which that Torah can be lived. That takes a tremendous amount of emotional sensitivity, of intuition, to have bina, to understand the implications of what that Torah is. That is the power of the mother, and that guidance is also Torah. Now, titish Torah simech. Very interesting Gemara, which I think can be understood well based on what I have told you. Gemara says that an isha chashuva came to the Beis Medrash of Elezer HaGadol. She had a question. Question was, if all the people who served the eagle did the same sin, then why were there three different death penalties? Some were killed by the Levian, by sword. Some were killed by a magefa, by a plague. And some were killed when Moshe Rabbeinu forced them to drink the ashes of the eagle mixed with water, like a sotah. They all did the same sin. Why three different death penalties? So Belezer said to this Isha Chashuva, this important woman, why don't you go home and knit? Ein chochma le'isha ela bepelech. A woman's wisdom is limited to knitting. Go home and knit. That seems very insulting. Chazal tells us this was an Isha Chashuva, this important woman. Why did Belezer send her home to knit? Was her question not a good question? The Gemara spends the next page discussing that question. It must have been a great question. So why didn't Rebbe Lezer tell her, have a seat? We'll come out after we discuss it in the Beis Medrash and we'll tell you the answer. Why did he send her home to knit? Thinking of is the following. Rebbe Lezer realized this woman was Taka Nisha Chashuva. And he told her the following. Our role is to take the abstract ideas and discuss them and analyze them and come out with what is truthful and what's not truthful. Those are the threads. They're abstract. They're not yet in a way, in a form they can be used. What's the woman's role? The woman's role is to take those threads that we create in this Beis Medrash and to weave them into a framework and make them something that's livable. Make them something that's not abstract, that's concrete, that applies down into the real world. If you're going to sit here and ask us abstract questions, great question, but it's an abstract question. It has no bearing on anything Lamaisa. If you're going to duplicate our role, then who's going to do your role? You go home and knit, not knit a sweater. You go home and take the threads that we create in this Beis Medrash and you weave them into a framework that will make a framework in which Torah can be lived. And this role of being an Ein B'Yisrael, having that Bina Yisera to influence Klal Yisrael, to be able to apply the Torah, to create that framework in which Torah can be lived, is the greatest role that exists, and I'll prove it to you. There was a woman in history who was everything that the modern liberated woman could ever want to be. She was a prophetess, she was a judges, she was a poetess, she was a leader, she was even a truck driver. She drove a chariot. Dvorah Nevi'ah. And when she got carried away, and she wanted to praise herself a little bit, what did she say? She didn't say, Achakamti Dvorah, Shakamti Nevi'ah, Shofetes, Mishoreres, Lochemes. What did she say? Achakamti Ein B'Yisrael. Seems to imply that the title Ein B'Yisrael is greater than all those other accolades. That is the greatest praise that anyone can have, to be an Ein B'Yisrael. And even though, ideally, Ein B'Yisrael applies to a woman in her specific family, but it goes way beyond that. Who had that designation of Ein B'Yisrael in recent history, who was given that title, Ein B'Yisrael? None other than Sora Schneer. And Sora Schneer never had her own children. Yet she was the Ein B'Yisrael par excellence. So it goes way beyond a woman's own individual family, the influence that women have on Klal Yisrael. The fact that that is the greatest accolade is borne out by the following story I heard from Rav Sharansky Shlita, the Menahel of the Beis Yaakov in Tel Aviv. Told me that his father, who was the Miyasid of that Beis Yaakov, told him the following story. The Beis Yisrael, the Ger Rebbe Zatzal, once asked for the Cheskel Sarna Zatzal, Who does he think was the greatest Torah personality of the previous generation? Cheskel Sarna said, since the Rebbe asked the question, why doesn't the Rebbe tell me who he thinks was the greatest Torah personality of the previous generation? So the Beis Yisrael told Rabbi Cheskel Sarna, your Talmidim would probably say the Chafetz Chaim, Reb Chaim Ozer, they were the greatest Torah personalities of the previous generation. And my Hasidim would probably say that my father was the greatest Torah personality of the last generation. They're all wrong. The greatest Torah personality of the last generation was a woman called Sarah Schneer. Because without her, the Chafetz Chaim or Chaim Ozer would have no Talmidim and my father would have had no Hasidim. That's what preserved Yiddishkeit in the last generation, the Noshim Tzidkaniyos. That's the greatest role. That's the Ein B'Yisrael, greater than all the other accolades. What is this misgeret, this framework that a woman has to create? And when she creates it, then she is the pivotal force in Klal Yisrael. When the Torah was given, the Torah was offered first to the women. That you're all aware of, but you're not aware of what the Marsha says. Moshe Rabbeinu was first to go to the women, Kosomar Labes Yaakov, Eilu Hanoshim, the Sagad Livnei Yisrael, Eilu Ho'anoshim. Go speak calmly, softly to the women, try to convince them to accept the Torah, and then go to the men, the Sagad, and tell them, hit them over the head, tell them strong words. That's what everybody knows. The Marsha says that's not what it means. Because we don't find that Moshe Rabbeinu went to the women first, and then he went to the men, and he said something, one thing to the women, and then he said something else to the men. He was told exactly what to say. Lo pachos v'lo yosef. Not more, not less, exactly. He didn't speak twice. He didn't speak one way to the women and then to the men. Says the Marsha, what it means is Moshe Rabbeinu was to approach the women alone. Not even to speak to the men. You speak to the women. Speak to them softly, convince them to receive and accept the Torah. And then, Kosoma Leves Yaakov, you Moshe Rabbeinu, go and speak to the women. The Sajed, and every woman then will go and hear her husband over the head, and her children over the head. And they'll make sure that they're Mekabel the Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu only approached the women. The Medrash says why. Why were the women the one who are approached to either accept or reject the Torah? The Medrash says three reasons. Two you're going to like, and one you're going to have to listen to anyway. The first reason the Medrash says, Noshim mizdarzos benitzvos yoser min ho'anoshim. Women have a greater verve, a greater excitement when they do mitzvahs, more than men. Second reason, Shemolicho says, Baalehen uvenehem leTorah. They lead their husbands and children to learn Torah. And the third reason, the Medrash says, the Rebbeinu Shlom said, when I created the world, I gave the first mitzvah to the man, and the woman ruined everything. This time I'll speak to the woman first, maybe she won't ruin this too. And they're not three different reasons, they're all the same thing. Noshim mizdarzos benitzvos, women have an extra verve, an extra excitement. They have that emotional sensitivity to mitzvahs, that they're able to understand the implications of the mitzvah. And therefore, they are the ones that lead their husband and their children to Torah. They're able to create that framework and to guide their husbands and children to apply the Torah they learn. And just as much as a woman can guide and lead her husband and child in the right way, she, Rahman al-Islam, can lead him the wrong way too. She has that power to guide that. It can go for the good, it can go, Rahman al-Islam, the other way also. There's a medrash that says that a tzaddik and a tzidkonis were married and they divorced. And the tzaddik married a rishita, and the tzidkonis married a rasha. And the end of the story was that the Sidkonis turned her husband, the Rosh, into a tzaddik, and the Rishatha turned her husband, the tzaddik, into a Rosha. And the Medrash ends, Mikan Shakol Talu Beisha. Everything depends on the woman. She has the power of influence for the good, or Rahman Litzlan the other way. What is the influence? What is this framework? The framework is a bias. Bina starts with a base. And that is the bias a Yehudi. The Jewish home, what's a home? A home is four walls with a door that can open and close. You can have windows, you have a roof. But the ikar is the four walls that create that bias, that create that framework. And if it doesn't have a door, then it's not a home, it's a box. It's a container. Has to have a way in and a way out. What is the function of those four walls? The first function is that the walls of the home create an inner sanctum. Before you put up those partitions, you're standing out in the Rishus HaRabim. You're standing out in the public thoroughfare. Put up the walls, you create an inner sanctum, a makom tzanua. What is tznius? Tznius is very much misunderstood. Before the chait of Adam and Chava, there was no need for tznius, because it was clear that human beings were neshamas. That was the ikar. And the body was a suit of clothing that the neshama wore in this world to be able to function. That's what we are. We were created as neshamas many thousands of years ago, right away at the beginning of the Bria. And we lived like that very finely in a spiritual world with no need for a body. We could think without a brain and see without eyes and hear without ears very nicely in a spiritual world. When our neshamas were put into this physical world, like an astronaut, when an astronaut goes into outer space, he has to put on a special spacesuit, because he can't exist in outer space without it. There's no oxygen, so he needs oxygen apparatus. There's no air pressure, so he needs a pressurized suit. There's no sound waves, so he needs a radio with which to communicate. When he comes back to Earth, he takes off the suit. He doesn't need it anymore. As long as the neshama was in a spiritual world, it could function very nicely without any physical apparatus. Once the neshama came into this physical world, it needed an inner spacesuit. It needed eyes to see and ears to hear and so on. When the neshama will go back to that spiritual world, it leaves the body here. It's one of the reasons that we express avelus by tearing our clothing, to show that it's only the clothing that's been torn away. It's only the spacesuit. But the essence of the person still exists. So before the chait of Adam and Chava was clear, the neshama is the main thing, and the body is a tool that the neshama uses to be able to function. But after Adam and Chava sinned, and they used their bodies not in consonance with their neshama, but against their neshama, then it became confusing. Maybe the body is the main thing. Obviously the body is not a servant of the neshama if it goes against the neshama. Not only that, maybe there is no neshama. All you see is the body. So whenever there is an inner spiritual value, and you could be misled and misdirected and attracted by the externals and think that's all there is, then we cover the externals to draw attention away from it and to say the ikar here is not what you can see. There's something beneath the surface, spiritual, which is the ikar here. That is what tznius is. And therefore we don't demand that animals wear clothing. You go to the zoo, nobody is makbid that they don't go to the zoo unless the animals are clothed. Because an animal has no neshama. What you see is what you get. So there's no reason to cover the body. The reason we cover our bodies is because we are not bodies, we're not animals. We have a neshama, and that's the ikar of us. And you could be misled and misdirected by the externals. Cover the externals. Distract attention from the externals. Making a statement, I'm more than a body. There's more to me than the eye meets. I am a neshama. That's what a person who's tzanua, that's the statement that he's making. That is the first function of this bias ayahudi. The walls create an inner sanctum to give an understanding that the ikar is the pnimius. The ikar is what is beneath the surface, the spiritual, not the externals. And that applies to Torah too. Torah is not just a bunch of external things to do. The Navi complains that Klal Yisrael keep the Torah tzav l'tzav, kav l'kav, zeir sham, a mitzvah here, a mitzvah there. What's the problem? That's how we keep the Torah. You don't sit in the sukkah, blow shofar, wave an esrog and lulav and eat matz all at once. One day you have this mitzvah, another day a different mitzvah. What's the problem? Basically, if I were to ask you how many things HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do, the answer is not many things, only one thing. Mo Hashem Elokecha Shoel Mima Ki Im Li'ira Hein Yiras Hashem Hein Veloshim Yevoni is Echad Yuni Hein One. One thing the Rabban Shalom wants from us. Rabban Shalom is one. Uritzono Echad, his will is one. The Rabban Shalom doesn't want a lot of things. He wants one all-united thing. What is that? That we should be Yirei Shamayim. What's a Yirei Shamayim? Someone who every second of his life, whether he's thinking, speaking, or acting, remembers that he is created in God's image and has to function as a Tzelem Elokim. That's all. And everything we think, speak, and do, in every aspect of our life, every second of our existence, we have to act as a Tzelem Elokim. That's all the Rabban Shalom wants. Except that is so overwhelming, so all-encompassing, it's impossible for us to relate to it. Achaz Diber Elokim. The Rabban Shalom said one all-encompassing thing, but Shnayim Zu Shamanu, we had to hear it as two. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to break it down into its components. Imagine a tremendous light bulb, gigantic, bright light bulb that's so big and so bright you can't look at it. So you take that light bulb and you put it inside a globe. And in the globe you cut 613 little windows. Through each little window you can see one small section of the light bulb. How do you know what the whole light bulb looks like? There's only one light bulb. How do you have an idea what the light bulb looks like? Look through every window and you'll get a composite picture of the light bulb. You know what the light bulb looks like. That light bulb is Ratzon Hashem. One all-encompassing will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for our entire life. And each mitzvah reveals to us another aspect of that Ratzon. So there's more to doing mitzvahs than just doing the mitzvah. That's called Shmi'a Likol Hashem. Listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there's a second step. And that's Lishmoa Bikol Hashem. Listen in to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. You fulfill the mitzvah, you open the window. If you don't fulfill the mitzvah meticulously, you'll never open the window. But once you do the mitzvah, now look inside that window that you've opened. And what does that reveal to you about the Ratz of Hashem, the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that encompasses your entire life, your values, your standards, your goals, your personality, your character? You keep Shabbos. The Shabbos doesn't start Friday evening and end Motzei Shabbos. That's the mitzvah. That's Shmi'a Likol Hashem. What is Shabbos supposed to reveal to you about the Ratz of Hashem that applies to your whole life, all week, all year? One of the ideas, that the goal of this world is not the Sheshes Yomim Tavel. It's very important as a means to reach an end, not as an end in itself. But the goal is spiritual. You work and involve yourself in the physical things of this world for a spiritual goal. So someone who keeps Shabbos meticulously, but from Motzei Shabbos till the next Friday, his goal in life is to earn another buck. Shmi'a Likol Hashem, but no Shmi'a Bikol Hashem. Give you another example of how one can fulfill Shmi'a Likol Hashem and not Bikol Hashem. This example, I promised my mother-in-law that I would say at every opportunity I have, and she's hoping one day I'll listen to it too. I grew up in Miami, and I attended the Hebrew Academy there, who was the Menahel, was Rav Alexander Gross, Zecher Tzadik Levroch. He was a Talmud of Shlaga Feivel Mendelovitz, that's all. He told me the following maisa that his Rebbe told him. Shlaga Feivel told him that he was once invited Friday night to eat by a certain gvir. They have the suda, Friday night suda by a certain gvir, who wanted the honor of having this Rosh Hashiva eat in his home. The men came home from shul Friday night, and the balabas knocked on his door, opened the door, looked inside, turned white, and was ready to faint. So Shlaga Feivel said, I understood that something is not right. There's something not right on the other side of that door. Why did this man turn white? Why is he ready to faint? So I was curious, he said, and I peeked inside. And right away saw the problem. The house was a mess, the table wasn't set, and the housewife looked like she just came from Mars. So I surmised what had happened. This poor woman was tired from preparing for Shabbos. So while the men were in shul, she said, you know what, I think I'll lie down for a few minutes, and I'll get up in plenty of time to put the house in order and set the table. And she fell into a deep sleep, and she didn't wake up until they opened the door. So the house was a mess, the table wasn't set, and she was hovering between this world and some other world. Now this man was extremely embarrassed. He's going to bring this Rosh Yeshiva into this house, but that didn't bother him that much, because he assumed that the Rosh Yeshiva would understand that this is not his fault. He was in shul. If the house is a mess and the table isn't set, it's his wife's fault. You know what bothered him? Sitting on the table were two challahs without a challah cover. Uncovered challahs. He was afraid the Rosh Yeshiva would look at the table, see the challahs without the cover, and assume that he was an Am Haaretz Gadol. He didn't know it. You're supposed to cover the challahs. So to make it clear whose fault that was, he starts yelling at his wife. You are incompetent, lazy. Don't you know you're supposed to cover the challahs? Now it's clear that he knows he's supposed to cover the challahs. Shlaga Feivel said this was the most absurd thing he's ever seen in his life. Why? One of the reasons we cover the challahs when we make it is because bread and the bracha on bread is more important than wine and the bracha on wine. And during the week, if you eat bread and drink wine, you first make a motzi and then you make a gofer. But Shabbos, you can't do that. You have to make kiddushin. So shlo yira hapas boshto. So the bread should not be slighted and embarrassed. We cover the challah. So it shouldn't be embarrassed when we make the bracha on wine before it. Now, I don't know. Maybe my wife bakes insensitive challahs. But I never came home from shul, said something not nice to my challahs. They ran off the table, locked themselves in their room until I could appease them. It happened to my daughters a few times, never with my challahs. Never. Personally, I never saw an embarrassed challah in my life. And if any of you have seen one, I'm sure there's professional people who could help you. What does that mean? Don't want to embarrass the challah. There are deep Kabbalistic ideas, but what's a simple idea? The simplest idea is that if you condition yourself not to insult and embarrass inanimate objects, you'll never come to insult a human being. And here is a man insulting his wife publicly to defend the honor of a piece of bread. Shmiya likol Hashem, 100%. He got the minig down pat. Shmiya bikol Hashem, what does it all mean? What is it supposed to teach you? What's the Ratzon Hashem that is expressed by this minig? Zero. So the first function of a Jewish home is to imbue those who live in it that there's more than the externals. There's more than the externals in the physical world. There's more than the externals in the spiritual world. Torah has a pnimius to it. Then there's a second function of those mechitzas, of those partitions, of those walls. When 10 people stand out in the field, they're 10 individuals. When 10 people stand within the partitions, they become a unit of 10. The partitions unite them. That is the concept of Shalom Bayis. Many people think that Shalom Bayis is a home where no one ever raises their voice. There's never any arguments. Everybody always agrees with everybody else. It's calm, serene, quiet. That does not describe Shalom Bayis. That describes a cemetery. Shalom Bayis could be a home where people argue. And they even raise their voices with one condition, that everybody is concerned what's best for all of us and not what's best for me. If everyone's concerned only about themselves, then they can keep quiet and not argue in Shalom Alei Nafshi, and that's not a bias. That's 10 individuals living under one roof. But when everyone's concerned about everyone and there's one unit and each person knows his place, each one knows his role, children know what it means to be children. And parents know what it means to be parents. And brothers and sisters know what it means to be brothers and sisters. And husband and wife know what their role is. And everyone does their role and contributes to this unit called the family. Each one doing their part. That's Shalom Bayis. That's Shleimus HaBayis. And that's what Klal Yisrael is. We pride ourselves that we receive the Torah with 613 nitzes. No one here, not me, not you, no one, could ever do tarid nitzes. Not because it's too hard, it's impossible. There are certain nitzes that apply only to Kohanim. So if you're not a Kohen right away, you don't have tarid nitzes. So what do you tell me? Okay, Kohanim have tarid nitzes. Not true. There are certain nitzes that only apply to Yisraelim. No Kohen will ever have the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen from the side of the Father. It's parted from that mitzvah. Some mitzvahs only for Levim. Certain mitzvahs only for men. No woman could ever do certain mitzvahs that are meant for men. And there are certain mitzvahs that are only for women. In my lifetime, at least, I hope that no man will ever bring the korban after childbirth. It's not a mitzvah for a man. Only a mitzvah a woman can do. So unless you're a Kohen, Levi, Israel, man and woman wrapped into one, which under normal circumstances wasn't shayach, but today may be possible. You can't have tarig mitzvahs. So how do we say that we accepted a Torah of tarig mitzvahs? Because we didn't accept the Torah as individuals. We accepted the Torah to each echad v'lev echad, as one unit, each one with their responsibilities. And that's part of these partitions of a home, to teach each person inside, and this is a mother's responsibility. What's the role of each one? Each one to know how to function together, and to function with their role, what they can contribute, and what they get from the family. Another aspect of those partitions is that the partitions serve as a buffer from winds that are destructive and other destructive things that may come from the outside. They keep outside things that should not enter the home. That's also Bayis HaYehudi, to know what not to bring into your home, to know how to protect your home from things that are outside there that don't belong in a Jewish home. And one would think that's easy. So you just learn the Shulchan Aruch and you'll know what not to bring into your home. Those things that are asur should stay out, and those things that are mutter should stay in. Easy. It's not easy. This week's Sedra, before we left Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mitzvah to take gold and silver, that everybody knows. But many people forget that there was a third item that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to take with us out of Mitzrayim. And those were smolos, clothing, Egyptian clothing. That seems very, very strange that HaKadosh Baruch would want us to take Egyptian clothing out of Egypt. Not only take it out, but the Rabban Shem told us what we're supposed to do with that clothing. V'samtem al b'neichem v'al b'noseichem. Put it on your children. Let them wear that Egyptian clothing. Very strange. One of the zechuyos, one of the merits we had to be able to leave Mitzrayim was that for 210 years we didn't wear Egyptian clothing. And now we're going out of Mitzrayim, and Kodesh Baruch Hu wants us to put that clothing on our children. What kind of chinuch is that? What's the purpose of this? I'll tell you what I think. Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to teach us a lesson for all times. Could be there was nothing intrinsically wrong with that clothing. It wasn't shatnez. It wasn't not sanua, because if it was, we couldn't wear it. We couldn't put it on our children. So intrinsically, you could go through the four halakim of Shulchan Aruch, and you would find nothing wrong with that clothing. And still, the Rabban Shem said, even though that clothing was glatt kosher, had you worn it in Mitzrayim the last 210 years, you never would have gone out. Why? Because in the desert, you can judge that clothing on its intrinsic merits. But in Egypt, had you worn that clothing, you would have been wearing it to be like a goy. That's treifas chazer. There can be things that are intrinsically 100% okay, but under certain circumstances, in certain places, at certain times, they have implications that make them treif. A short example, and then we will wind this up. When I was growing up, I was in high school in Miami. The rage of the time in the secular world was a band called the Beatles. Not the four-legged or six-legged variety, the two-legged variety. And they initiated a fad in the world that men should grow long hair. became respectable for men to have long hair. And what affects the Goyish world affects the Jewish world. And in my high school class, some of my friends stopped taking haircuts. They started growing long hair. And after a few weeks, my Rosh Yeshiva called in these boys, and they said to them, if you don't go, it was a Friday, and get a haircut, L'Kavod Shabbos, don't come back on Sunday, you are suspended from school. You can't stay here with long hair. So what did they answer? They said, Rebbe, what's wrong with long hair? A Nazir has long hair, he's holy. We want to be holy people. Did you ever see a picture of the Ragachover go? Big head of hair. Never wanted to take a haircut because you want to stop learning. We want to be like the Ragachover. What was the answer? A Nazir? Could be that there's nothing intrinsically wrong with having long hair. Could be. But if you have long hair to be like the Beatles, it's straight Tichasa. So therefore, it's not so simple to know what to bring in your home and what not to bring in your home. You could go through the four halakim of Shulchan Aruch, and there's nothing wrong with it. But if in your time, in your place, it stands for something that's not Jewish, that's not commensurate to what Yiddishkeit and the values of Yiddishkeit are, then it becomes straight like chazer. And in another place, another time, it could be perfectly okay. I always marvel at the fact, just came here now during this season, and I was reminded of something that in Eretz Yisrael, kimat, you don't see. Now, unfortunately, with all the goyim that live in Eretz Yisrael, beginning to see the lights this time of year, not only Sukkot time. But if you go to Neir Sharim during Sukkot, you will see the same light displays that you see here in the end of December on the Sukkot in Yidden of Neir Sharim. And in fact, they buy their Sukkot decorations and it says on it what it is. They can't read English. And I'm sure if they would come here during this period of year, they would say, they, the Christians here, stole our Sukkot decorations. In Yerushalayim, it has no implication. You can use those lights 100%. If somebody would decorate his Sukkot with those lights here, it's Chukas HaGoy. So it depends on the time and the place and the implications, and there could be things that are 100% kosher in one place that another place are 100% trade, because there they mean something, there they have implications. What's kosher in the desert is not the same thing as kosher in Mitzrayim. And lastly, there's a door on the house. And the door on the house serves two purposes. One is to know when to shut the door. There are things that should be kept inside the house that are private, modest, should not be brought out into the Rishus HaRabim. And there are things that should never be brought in from the outside into the house. And there are things that should be brought from the house to the outside, and things that should be brought in from the outside to the inside. You have to know when to open the door on both sides, you have to know when to close the door. And that's what the mezuzah is there for. The mezuzah has two parashios. One b'loshin yochid and one b'loshin rabin. To know what things should stay in the Rishus HaYochid and what things should remain in Rishus HaRabin and what things can cross that border. That's also part of the home. And once you have a home that has that inner beauty, that inner holiness, and you have a home that has that achdus, that has that shalom bias, and you have a home that's protected from all the negative things from the outside, now you can open the door and let the light of that home enlighten an entire world and light up an entire world. And just to end, if you want to remember what I said, in two or three sentences, there are certain mitzvahs that devolve on the home, not on individuals. Ner Shabbos. Not everybody has to light Ner Shabbos. Somebody in the home has to light Ner Shabbos, and everybody is Yotzei with that Hadlokas Neris. Then there's also mezuzah. Not everybody has to put a mezuzah on the door. There has to be one mezuzah per room, no matter how many people live in that room. It's a mitzvah of habayis, mitzvah of the home. Then there's bedikas chametz. Not everybody has to go search for chametz. Somebody has to search the home. The home has to be searched. And ner chanukah, ner ishu beisam. Not everybody has to light. That's mahadrin, mahadrin min mahadrin. The main mitzvah is ner echad, one candle per household. Those are the mitzvahs of the home, and those are the mitzvahs that represent these ideas. Ner Shabbos represents that inner Kedusha that the home has to have. And their Shabbos is also for Shalom Bayis, that people shouldn't trip over each other in the dark. There should be a unity. People able to function together, that's Ner Shabbos. Then there's the mezuzah that protects Shomer Dalsus Yisrael, that things from the outside that are negative should not come in and penetrate the house. And sometimes, unawares, things get into the house under the door, in the cracks in the windows. So every once in a while you have to make a bedikas chametz. You have to go search in your house and see that you don't have things there that shouldn't be in the house, that should be on the outside, or shouldn't be at all. And lastly, if you have a house that has that Ner Shabbos, that has that mezuzah, that has that bedikas chametz, then you can open the door and put the Neris Chanukah like we do in Eretz Yisrael on the outside of the door and light up an entire world from a home like that. The Medrash says, and with this I will conclude, the Medrash says, L'mishpich oseihem yotzu min ateva, mikan shiyotzi mideis haknesses mishpachos mishpachos. They left the teva, Noach's teva, family by family. From here we learn that when you leave shul, you should leave by family. The simple meaning is that teva means an ark, a boat, but in the Lashon HaMishnah, the teva was the Aron Kodesh. What we call the Aron Kodesh, they call the teva. So l'mishpich oseihem yotzu min ateva, when you leave the teva, when you leave the Aron Kodesh, she should leave by family, just like they left the teva of Noah. And in English, it's still preserved. The Aron HaKodesh is called the Holy Ark. It also has an ark. What's the deeper meaning? We need to survive in this world in a teva. We are surrounded by Mayim HaZedonim, by flood waters, polluted waters. The world around us is a dangerous place, physically, spiritually. How do you survive in such a world? So you have to be in a teva like Noah survived. You need something that will make it be act as a buffer, that will insulate you from those waters. What are the teva of our generation? Bate knesios, bate medrashos, shuls, yeshivas, girls' schools, Beis Yaakov, that is the teva. But you can't stay in school your whole life. You can't even stay in a yeshiva your whole life. You can't stay in a shul your whole life. So how are you able to leave and still be protected? Says the Medrash, L'mishpich oseihem yotzu min ateva. If you imbue your home with the same standards and the same values as you have in the shul, and in the yeshiva, and in the Beis Yaakov, then you can leave those institutions, and your home serves as a teva. Your home will protect you. But if your home, the standards and the values are not the same, then och and vey, the day is going to come, you're going to have to leave those institutions, and you're going to be unprotected. The Shchus Noshim Tzikonios Nigolu Mimitzrayim, we are going through the parshios of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And Yetzias Mitzrayim came in the schus of Noshim Tzikonios. If you will perform your role and you will create the greatest institution that exists in Klal Yisrael, every other institution only comes after the bayis. There's a Beit HaKnesses. There's a Beit HaMedrash. It's only after the bayis. If you create those batim, if you create those homes that have the same standards and values of the Bate Medrashos and Bate Knesios, then the Shchus Noshim Tzikonios of Ardor, we will soon greet Mashiach Tzikeinu B'Mheirav Yom.